Let's go, Matt. Let's go.
You've heard of Taylor Swift, right? The musician?
Swifties? Oh, yeah.
Singer-songwriter?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Poet?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Guitar player?
Bassist?
Ten years ago, when my wife and I first met and started dating, okay, she was into Taylor Swift. And I had maybe, I wasn't really that familiar and maybe heard a song or two, maybe secretly kind of like, oh, that's catchy. But it didn't extend further than that. And she and some of her friends were really into her. And I remember her encouraging me, like, you should really get in, you should give her a try. I think you'd like her. And I remember kind of just being like, no, I'm not going to do that. And not out of any image thing. It was more of a, it'd almost be worse if I did like it. Like, what if I do like it? Where do I go from there? I'm at this point, I'm pushing 30. I'm starting to the hair's thinning, the metabolism's slowing down. And then I try Taylor Swift and I actually like it. What does that do for, that doesn't do anything positive for me. Am I gonna start going to concerts?
Yeah.
No. So, I mean, they're not going to like it and it's fine. I'm not missing out on anything. Or maybe even worse, I do like it and I have to, no pun intended, tailor my life around. You see what I mean?
It's That's
I'm not going to try because
it's a big choice.
It's bad either way.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're on pins and needles here. What did you decide to do?
I didn't get into it. But, you know, if we were going somewhere in her car and she picked the music, I'd listen to it. But I don't seek it out on my own.
Has your wife been to a concert?
No. And I think it's gone through phases. I don't know if
she's active right now. Mm. I say, and this is, I propose this, okay? For one of the big anniversaries, one of the kind of round numbers, 5, 10. 15, if she's still going. I say you get tickets to a Taylor Swift concert.
I don't really want to go to one of those.
Yeah, see, that wasn't really the point that I was trying to make.
Well, it'd be for her. I understand.
Yeah, that okay. Her, yep.
But I'm saying she's not, I think she's kind of moved on to, she's into other things too now. Mm. I don't know, 10 years, 2013, 2014 was big.
I know, hey.
Under Taylor Swift.
She's still around. She's still selling out. She's still making people cry.
Good for her. I'll get her tickets and she can go with her friends. I don't want to go.
They're expensive. Friends.
But do you see, like, you see what I'm...
six tickets.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. Okay. I'll get her a book or something.
About Taylor Swift?
You see the point? You see the point I'm driving at, though, right?
The point you're driving at,
like, as a man in his 30s, what?
When you first enter a relationship, you will start to like music that you sort of, and then you, is that what?
The thought made me nervous. What if I actually,
okay,
this 16-year-old girl singing about boys.
Yeah, and you like her.
What if the music speaks to me? That's no
good. That's your worry.
That's the worry. So it's not even worth, I'm not even pursuing.
Going down that road.
Yeah.
Let's see. I have no idea how old Taylor Swift is. I guess she does Thursday Night Football. Somehow that was the first search thing.
I thought that was what's her face.
She's 33 years old.
So she would have been 23 back then.
So she could have spoken to you.
No.
It's from West Reading, Pennsylvania. That's kind of like Kansas, isn't it?
I don't think so.
I didn't like that song, Shake It Off. I'm looking at some of the songs that... if you're a big Taylor Swift fan right now, you're probably punching the wall as you listen to this. Yeah, that's about it. 5'11". Okay. I can give you... Do you want me to pull up any more information about Taylor Swift?
No, like I told you, that's an area of pursuit that I shut down 10 years ago.
Okay.
I can't let myself go down that
road. I think if you go down the Taylor Swift fandom role, you're also going to go down the I hate Ticketmaster. I think people don't like Ticketmaster because they jack up the prices, and I think Taylor Swift tickets get somehow, I don't know how all this works, but you know, you spent $5,000 on a Taylor Swift concert, and you said to yourself 10 years ago you weren't going to go down this rabbit hole of fandom. Mm-hmm. Look at you now. Can't even buy food for your family because you got Taylor Swift tickets. I think you sound happy in the decision you made.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right?
Is there a band you regret not getting into? You had the opportunity, someone introduced them to you, and you decided not to. 10 years later, you regret that decision.
No, because you can always like get into them.
No, but you can't, though.
The closest thing I have is...
Can't relive the past.
I disagree with your premise there entirely, but closest thing I have is not quite what you're saying, but back when I was like, I think it was 17 or 18 in high school, a young up and coming guy, trebador on his guitar, was playing Down the Road in Lawrence.
Jack Johnson?
Granada. John Mayer.
A guy John Mayer.
No one had ever heard of was playing a little at a smaller venue. And I opted out for just because I was a bookish weirdo. I probably made up some excuse, but I just didn't want to go to Lawrence and, you know, be in a crowd. But yeah, and it turned out it was John Mayer. And
to be fair,
the closest thing I could have gone and
to be fair, was, yeah. John Mayer, if you don't know anything about him, right, the name itself sounds kind of boring.
Yeah, but like I said, I didn't make it out of a musical. It was just me being a 17-year-old awkward kid.
Can I tell you that we're in story time now and we're telling the truth? I have the opportunity, and I will freely admit this, I do enjoy the Adele songs. They can be quite good. Yeah. About 10 years ago, I want to say, whenever she first got popped, before she went to arenas, before she went to stadiums, she was doing like, you know, your normal maybe 1,000 seater concert thing down in Denver. I had the opportunity to go. I decided not to do that, and that clearly was going to be the last chance because, as you know, I don't like the large crowds. I'm not going to go see a concert with 50,000 people. I had an opportunity to see Adele in a concert venue that probably held maybe 1,000 people, maybe 700, something like that, and I did not take it. It's kind of a regret.
Okay. Yeah.
And on that note, welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and Adele and Taylor Swift. I'm Peter, joined as always by Matt. Matt, what you did. You got me to admit something about Adele.
Yeah. Well, and John Mayer and Taylor Swift, our Brooklyn hipster listeners are
not
happy. Probably rolling their eyes and tuning out right now.
I know. I should have said, you know.
I have pretty lame music taste, to be honest with you.
The Billy Joel story kind of hurts you, I think.
I like Billy Joel and John Mayer and Rod Stewart.
You like Rod Stewart?
I love Rod Stewart. And, and I'm anymore, I'm into 90s country. So
I will admit, I've kind of delved into some, I don't think it's not modern country, but there's a group of people doing country that kind of sounds like old timey stuff from like the 50s and 60s. Kind of like it. What's that?
Nickel Creek.
No, I'm going to keep the names private because I feel like I'm going to just embarrass. I feel like the hipster Brooklyn, where the music, you know, is the music tastes are created, would look down upon me.
They do.
But it's just you and me here.
But they look down on our book taste too.
Maybe. Anyway.
Except when we swing big.
Swing big. Fun show tonight, Matt. We got a couple things on the agenda. We're going to be talking about The Manticore by Robertson Davies, the second in his Deptford trilogy. We're also going to be picking a June book. June is not over. And we kind of set ourselves up with a little bit of a criteria this month, which is kind of fun, which we'll get to. But I told you on our Patreon last week when I went on to vacation out to Santa Fe, we're going to drive out there. I was going to attempt audiobooks for the first time.
Yeah.
And you are an expert in the audiobook world. You have your own podcast where you just, it's a solo podcast where you, that's, I'm just kidding. But I was delving in for the first time. I asked you some kind of like tips, tricks for it. And
I love how Peter approaches audiobooks like there's this new thing, just the concept so foreign to him. Yeah. He's asking for tips and advice on how to deal with it as if it's something more than putting a CD or pressing play on a thing and listening to somebody read to you.
Well, you know, I thought
he's approaching it like it's a skill. It's really just listening.
I was trying to engage in some friendly conversation. My friend who I do a podcast with, and I was asking him, you know, hey, maybe you're like, you know, there's more to it than just pressing.
You did ask. You asked me for recommendations, and I said the narrator's key.
That's not really a recommendation, though. See, now I feel hurt by it. By
I gave you some actual recommendations on the Patreon episode.
I got two books. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. How'd it go? Sorry. How'd it go?
Didn't listen to any of it on the way down.
Okay.
Okay. So we start off on a rough first step there. On the way back, though, we listened for about 3 to 4 hours.
Hey.
Okay. I picked two books. I went the mystery route. Okay. I got Agatha Christie for one, Five Little Pigs, I believe. It's the title. The one we actually listened to, we got pretty far into, is The Thursday Murder Club by Richard Osman.
Oh, nice.
I think I've talked about this maybe on our Patreon, kind of a hit mystery thriller. Not thriller, really. It's just a kind of murder mystery where old people in Britain try to solve crimes or murders. And you said the narrator, very nice sounding British lady who does kind of, she doesn't really commit to all the different kind of voices of the characters, but she kind of distinguishes them enough.
Mm-hmm.
Very pleasant, made the drive go by pretty fast. Can't complain there. I would say sometimes when you kind of have to focus on your driving and maybe change lanes or do something, I kind of didn't hear what the narrator was saying. So that kind of was a bit of a bummer. So I kind of missed stuff along the way.
Okay.
And then I would say overall, positive experience, Matt.
Good.
I'm not done with the book. I still have like 9 hours left.
Okay.
But enjoyable. I see why people like it.
Good.
Especially if you're in the car.
Well, it's perfect for car. Yeah. Cars, yeah. Or going on a walk or something. Yeah,
or at my work, I can put in some earbuds and work in the warehouse.
Yeah.
I do that.
See? That's the way to go.
I will say this. I was thinking about listening today at work. And in my head, I was like, where did I leave off? Is that an issue for you? Like, where you leave off?
No, because if you're doing it on an app, it'll track your progress automatically.
Yeah, but like, what was the last thing you heard? It was my issue. I was like, I don't remember where I was in the story. I remember this point. And then actually, once I started it up again, I was like, oh, okay, I remember they're starting to like gather some information about this murder. But that was my only thing. I was like, if I did this a lot, I would probably get better at remembering where I kind of just left off. Because my other thing is, if I did it before bed, I might just fall asleep and not, and it would just play.
Okay, that might that would be bad. That would be a thing.
Yeah,
it's never been an issue for me at all. It's just like picking up a book after, you know, you remember what's going on in the story because you're invested in the story.
I'm just telling you my initial things, and yeah, I feel like you're becoming like you're getting angry with me.
No, I'm not angry.
Okay.
I enjoy how it's such a foreign thing to you.
I don't typically like to listen to people read stories.
Yeah.
I had to do it in college. You had to go to poetry readings or short story readings. I just kind of tuned them out.
Yeah, I actually don't like that stuff either.
See?
That is interesting. I can see the hesitation. Audiobooks are a little different. And I used to drive a lot, and it really helped.
Yeah.
Really helped pass the time. So,
Anyway,
I'm glad you proved.
I feel like that bored you.
No, I was curious how you felt about them.
I might become a huge. I might have to do it to catch up on some of my re on some of the books reading, to be honest with you.
Well, that's what I do.
Yeah, that's all my thoughts are on the old audiobook world.
I'm glad you like him. I got Rex. I got good narrators.
I
Even
heard
if you don't want
you
to
said
do too,
Will Patton, right?
Will Patton is fantastic
Can I just
narrator.
look up Will Patton? Oh, one downside, they're kind of expensive.
Yeah, if you have a CD player in your car, I go to the library and get the CD. So I do a lot of it.
Smart, very smart.
Yeah, well, there's a famous audiobook company that we don't do ads for yet.
Okay, I know what you're talking about.
But that's actually a decent deal.
Okay. And do you rent the books that way, or do you? I don't know.
No. Oh, actually, the way to do it would be I do Hoopla.
Oh,
It's
that's the
from
library. Yeah.
the public library. And yeah, you check them out basically. You have them for 3 weeks, but they're free. And if you're not done, you can just recheck it out again after
I
3 weeks.
want to do that. Is that just on your
Hoopla
phone?
from
Hoopla.
the Poudre River Valley Library District.
All right.
It's a free plug for the library. They don't have to pay us. I like the library.
How does the library make money?
Tax money, tax dollars.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but I was just making sure I wasn't missing some form. I'm like, it's not just fines because they got rid of the fines.
They got rid of the fines.
And that's like 10 cents.
Probably not a good move, actually. I never minded paying the fines.
You ever gotten busted for not returning a library book?
Not at this library, but I think
Have you ever just stolen a book?
no.
Have you
Kept
ever
one. I've like misplaced one and been, gotten the bill for the fee, but
placement?
I've
That's probably how they get you.
it's like $90 for the placement fee.
Yeah,
But
that's.
no, and I think I found it and returned it. But no, I've never stolen a book from the library, Peter. I'd be wrong.
That would be interesting if you met someone. You're like, hey, look at all these books. Oh, you go to a lot of library book sales. You're like, nope, I just steal them.
Just steal them.
I give them a fake address and a fake ID. Look at this. I'm just stealing books. That's a bet. You shouldn't do that, but wink, wink. It's a good way to get some books. So yeah, that's my audio review. I think it's probably the only time I'm going to do this. So there you go. You want to talk about the Manticore, Matt?
I do.
Okay. I don't know where to begin. Actually, I know where to begin. This book was a dud. And I
Yeah.
want you to convince me otherwise.
Okay.
For those who aren't familiar, this kind of, we start off with the fifth business, which we led la read last year by Robertson Davies. Both of us were like blown away by it, I would say. And this is the second one in the trilogy, the Manticore. And it follows David Stanton, correct? Kind of
Stanton.
Staunton, who is the son of Boy Staunton, if you remember from the first book, who dies in kind of mysterious circumstances. And for me, this book, I sort of like the premise, and we'll get into the premise. Well, essentially, the premise, most of the book takes place where he's talking to his therapist in Switzerland, kind of going over his life. And there's some interesting passages. I feel like there's some like getting a fuller picture of his background and his relationship with his father, sister, his mother. That's good. It just felt undercooked for me, Matt. Felt one note. It didn't have the, I don't know, it was missing a lot of what I liked about the fifth business, and I can't pinpoint it down. It just felt weak, and ultimately a kind of a experience. The ending kind of almost saves it, but then kind of becomes weird. It just, I hate to say it, man, because I love the first book, Fifth Business. This was, convince me otherwise. Convince me otherwise, Matt. Floor is yours.
Okay. First of all, I really like the book.
There we go. This is what your brother wants. Your brother
it's
wants.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Disagreement. Well, it's I mean, it's essentially a guy undergoes Jungian analysis. So if you're not into that sort of thing,
that is not what I want.
Well, but that's what you got.
That's what I'm getting. That's what it is, right? Okay.
And the first, the fifth business is more of a traditional story, and it had more twists and turns, but there's some of the Jungian stuff in there. In this one, we kind of delve deep into just a person's psyche, right? I really enjoyed it, and I'd remind you that it's also the second part of a trilogy, and I'm curious to see how it ends up, because I think it's part of a journey. Because the third one, The World of Wonders, is going to take place from the magician, the kid who was born early because of the stone, Magnus Isengrim. So I'm curious how that's handled. But this is kind of the middle part. And usually the middle parts of trilogies are a little darker. This one is the Manticore, which is a mythical monster. But I like the conceit. I like the concept. It is David Staunton, who is kind of just an ancillary character in the first one. The first one is Dunstable Ramsey and Boy Staunton. And then David's kids are kind of around, but, you know, not a big part of the story. This one, David is basically a high functioning alcoholic, big shot criminal defense lawyer. And he has a little, I don't know, there's no specific incident. He just decides to go to Switzerland and kind of
dry out. The breakdown at the magic show.
Yeah.
Screamed out.
We might have known that he was the guy who yelled, who killed Boy Staunton.
Some reason for the main characters in this analogy might not work, but it kind of felt like they were overacting. They were just so dramatic about stuff. I don't know. I'm letting you convince me this book is good. I'm not going to go completely,
It might be a matter of taste. I'm saying if you're into the Jungian stuff and that sort of thing.
So can you tell me, can you quickly describe what is the Jungian kind of look into a person?
What
does that entail when you say that?
It's a Jungian analysis, from what I gather. I'm not an expert. I just read a couple things. It's, if you look into within, if you're like a psychologist or therapist will try to help you deal with your issues, right?
Yeah.
Figure out what it is about you, what that drives you, you know, delving deep into who you are, right? And so the Jung takes myth and symbols very seriously. So there are certain archetypes, which we get into in this book, right? There are certain, the archetypes, I think he popularized that term, that everybody, there's the shadow self.
Yeah, I was going to say, he talks a lot about the shadow and like what.
Yeah. Kind of your darker impulses that you kind of ignore, and by ignoring and not coming to terms with them, you tend to project them out onto the world and your darker side grows, right? There's kind of your psyche or your anima. There's your wise old mentor, the magus. There's all these archetypes that dwell within each person, and a well-developed person will kind of come to terms with all the different aspects of themselves and combine them and into a functioning, more whole human being, right? The Enneagram goes about, it's a different way of looking. I think it's kind of the same process. So that's kind of, I didn't, there's better ways of describing it that you can find out there, but that's essentially the subject matter of this book. And so the conceit is this guy, this kid, the grown son of our character, the very wealthy business magnate in the first character, his high-functioning alcoholic son has a midlife crisis-ish, goes to Switzerland to undergo Jungian analysis.
Like a year long?
Yeah. Split up. It was like dialogue. In his diary, the analysis or the therapist has him keep a diary. And so that's how the story's formatted, through bits of dialogue and diary entries. And we get a little, it's a different view of the story of the fifth business, you know, told from a different character. So the Ramsey character is seen from a pupil's perspective. There's that whole business about David's sister Caroline kind of telling him he thinks Ramsey is
father,
his real father. And we know that's not true because we've read the first one, but it's halfway plausible if you didn't have our information. So it's kind of in Dave's head, like, is it not true?
Did we learn that much new in this new book?
Story-wise, no, but I think
that was part of my issue too. It never felt like there was much of a forward momentum.
Well, I think it may just be a bridge. I don't know.
I think that was kind of the point, maybe, but it felt kind of stuck in second gear.
I don't know. I liked it because I'm into the Jungian stuff. Okay. So that was the main point of the book. You're right. I could see not liking it if you're not into that and you want a story.
Not as so much story, but just more. I didn't find David that all that interesting.
I think he is. So Ramsey in the first one is an academic character. I found him interesting too, but he's scholarly and lives in his head and doesn't really act in the world. David character. Mm. Is active in the world. He's less in his head. He's more of a rational
person,
you know, who's made something of himself, right? Then in motive, he wanted to become a separate man than his father. He's got his own issues. You notice how he didn't really have any friends his own age.
No.
He's been celibate most of his life. So he's got issues, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just him coming to terms with that. So if the first type of character we're dealing with in the first book, it's a scholarly, withdrawn person who doesn't live in the real world. This character in the second book is somebody who lives in the real world but doesn't have much of an inner life. And so
that's
you know. And so Dave is not too interesting of a person. His internal thoughts aren't as rich as Ramsey's were. But I think that's part of the issue, is this like rational lawyer type kind of starting to accept that maybe there's something deeper going on, right? And he takes you through kind of the Jungian arc, the anima, the shadow, the friend. And the friend archetype is just a teddy bear. It wasn't like a real, the teddy bear and the genealogist were the only real, you know,
which the, kind of, as you're describing this, I'm like, this is not. This is not my jam. This is not what I mean.
Yeah. And that's okay.
But I you know.
I'm just saying that's kind of what's going on there.
What do you make of the last 50 pages where it's almost sort of he pushes forward like the plot of the book? So he's out of therapy. That whole section is done. That whole section takes up probably 3/4 of the book. And then sort of he bumps into the sort of characters that we know. And it's almost odd how everything kind of comes out in the open in a weird way, I thought. The ending is very just sort of straightforward. He learns about sort of things he didn't know about. And it's I thought that was an interesting choice.
I think he kind of takes it in stride. He learns
about
the Magnus Eisen. The Isengrim character may have technically killed his father.
He kind of just admits to it, rather. And he
takes it in stride.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Because he says, your father sort of asked for this. And
Dave's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's very, just kind of strange behavior for my characters.
No, I don't think it's strange. I think it makes sense in the context of the rest of the book.
Fair enough.
And meeting everybody, he meets everybody that we know from the first one. Dunstable, the Lysel woman, Magnus, Isaac. I think it's obviously a bridge to the third one. The third one is going to pick up.
I did see.
The first one,
I did see some people say that this wasn't their favorite, but then I also saw people say that, like, maybe for the reasons that you're saying, that they found it to be one of the more interesting ones of the trilogy.
The first one's my favorite so far, but I'm keeping in mind, I think it's part of a whole. And so I'm curious where the third one leads. And I really did enjoy the just watching the process of a Jungian thing play
It
out.
felt like, you know, when a TV show has a really successful first season, and obviously it's being created by very talented people, and then the talented people want to go in a different direction, and it's not really what the audience is expecting. It's not really, in the case of the Manticore, it's not what I was expecting as sort of a follow-up book. And that might have played into sort of some of my disappointment, I will
Yeah,
say.
you know what this is?
Season two of The Wire.
Season two of the you were describing season two of The Wire.
That's what was in my head.
But see, having seen the whole show,
It
I
worked.
like season two.
Yeah.
It's part of it. And you needed season two to get to three and the rest. And now that I've seen the thing as a whole, it's just okay, that's what
Yeah.
season two had to.
Boats? Why are we on boats?
Dock workers. Why?
Shipping containers.
It's Avon. Yeah, no, that's exact. It all fits together. So I'm trying to keep like, because this is like a beloved series. So I don't, you know, it doesn't. People who like the first one like the other three. So I'm excited to keep going. I'm excited about Robertson Davies. He has like two other trilogies and a bunch of standalone stuff.
Can I read something from you on the back of my book? I wanted to get your take on this because I don't
Yeah.
know if I agree with this. Kind of the blurb on the back, and then I have an old Penguin, very cool edition. I think I've shown you it.
Oh, yeah, that's mine.
Yeah. Oh, we have the same edition. This novel is part of the acclaimed trilogy that also includes Fifth Business and World of Wonders, but it is not necessary to read them in order to appreciate the Manticore. Do you agree with that?
No, you need to read the first one.
Yeah,
I totally disagree.
I was reading. I saw that on the back. I was like, I think you kind of need to read the Fifth Business to fully
Be
understand
on
what's going
here. Yeah. I guess you could appreciate the if you're into the psychology stuff,
The
you could
first part would
appreciate it.
make sense.
But no, there's too much references. The stuff with Caroline teasing David about him maybe being Ramsay's son, you'd be out to sea. You'd be like, what? Okay, maybe. Because there's a whole thing you have to know it's not true, but it's plausible for David. You have to know this, the stuff at the end wouldn't make sense because it wouldn't be characters you familiar with. Actually, yeah, that's 100% wrong. 100% wrong.
Do you think the people who wrote that read the books?
No, I bet they skimmed. I'm starting to gather, I think a lot of reviewers skim the books and don't
There
actually.
is, I do have quite a few passages highlighted in this book as just sort of like smart observations. So those were engaging. I don't want to say this is completely like a complete dud.
He's a good writer.
He is a good writer. For me personally, it just fell flat. None of the what I would say, quote unquote, the brilliance of the Fifth Business, I didn't find in this one. It's not to say it's a bad book. It's obviously doing something that is not what I was expecting or kind of wanting from the second book. And that's fine. It's completely fine because it hits other registers that you kind of alluded to. So
Yeah, and that's the point. I will give you the Fifth Business was just a well-told story.
yeah.
It was a nice little, like a little small town. Here's what it's like growing up in a small town before World War I, and then it sagged into kind of a
That's a book you could
it
just
was weird.
read. I'll say this. If I had just read The Fifth Business, I wouldn't say we ever, we will get to the third book. But if there were just two books, I would say you don't really need to read the second book is where I'm at right now. It doesn't give me that much more to the story. It's
Okay.
where I've kind of, there's some more elements to it, but yeah, it's kind of the middle passage, and maybe I'm curious to see how the trilogy ends.
Let's see where it leads.
Okay.
The whole thing's a metaphor for a person finding himself, which I realize isn't maybe the best sales pitch to a lot of people, but I enjoyed it. I think maybe, like I said, you have to be in it and that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Davies as an author is, you're in good hands as far as style, and he's not writing boring prose to say, but maybe for me, just the story and stuff wasn't, anyway.
Yeah. I ate it up.
Do you have any quotes or anything you want to read out loud? Or
yeah, I got a couple.
Before we go on to June?
Yeah, I got a couple. I liked when he's talking to his therapist here. This is his therapist talking to David. When we were talking earlier, I said I thought you saw yourself to some extent in the role of Sidney Carton, the gifted, misunderstood, drunken lawyer. These literary figures, you know, provide us with an excellent shorthand for talking about aspects of ourselves and all we encompass, and we all encompass several of them. Are there any literary figures who you empathize with, Peter?
Any literary figures that I empathize with?
Because Sidney Carton is the guy from Tale of Two Cities, right?
I have a thing. I don't really do the characters in a book or characters in a book for me. I don't ever feel like, oh, I don't know.
Well, you know,
kind of leave them in the book.
Mm-hmm. You know what I think we're dealing with here, Peter.
Yeah, what's that?
You're afraid to find out who Peter really is. That's what we're. That's what we're up against.
That might be true. I will say the character Nettie is kind of I think bad. Kind of the caretaker of that. I kind of like that character. She's I like the way Davies handles her. You're not sure. Like, did she kill Boy Stanton's?
I don't think she did. I thought that was Caroline messing with.
But I don't know.
I'd have to go back and look at the passages in the Fifth Business, because I thought the mom kind of lost her will to live.
Yeah. And it was
the mom who left the windows open because she
couldn't. Yeah.
That's how I remembered it. And then I thought Carolyn, because Carolyn was kind of poking David about, she may or may not have actually believed it, but her imagination, like she was a precocious, imaginative kid. And so she was kind of needling her brother.
Yeah,
about
she was a very unreliable storyteller and narrator, but she's not really the narrator of the book. But like what she's telling David is highly suspect in some ways.
And then David, and then the analyst hones in on it. It's like she's a certain type of person who enjoys. She's very sensitive to that type of thing, and she enjoys needling you. She may or may not even believe it. She just knows you, and you know.
Anyway.
Speaking of, one more, I like this. And this is kind of the Dr. Von Holler, the you call them analyst or therapist? I think they're analysts.
So, yeah, psycho, I don't know exactly.
Either way.
Firm would have been in the 70s, but yeah.
So this is like a lot of, so with the with like dream figure, you know, like if somebody you went to junior high with shows up in your dreams tonight, Peter. It's not necessarily, it doesn't have anything to do with the actual person. It's like, oh, I need to go call Janice or whoever. You know, like not the actual, it's whatever feelings you have about them in your mind, whatever you projected onto them. That's the significance. So all your dream figures, they're all in your psyche. It really doesn't have anything to do with the actual people. So when people from your past or whoever show up in your dreams, that's what you're dealing with. Your psychic projections of them, aspects of yourself and what they mean to you. That's kind of, and so a lot of, especially with men, their anima, their visions of the female get, you know, lashed on to women in the world. And our care, our protagonist in this story, you know, he had his first like high school love, and he kind of came to terms with the fact he thought he was like very much in love with her. And he came to see it, and he was just, those were kind of his pent up feelings they projected onto just some girl, right? It was like, oh, men revenge themselves very thoroughly on women they think have enchanted them, when really these poor devils of women are merely destined to be pretty or to sing nicely or to laugh at the right time. You know, So all the pent up love, energy, or emotion that you're wanting to project, especially when you're young, you kind of project that on the random girl who smiles at you, and that becomes your first love. And it's not really that. It's just you were ready to pounce on that, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? That's kind of what we're dealing with here.
It's a psychoanalytical novel, right?
Exactly. So if you like psychoanalytical novels, this will be right.
And it's also interesting, you probably can hear like the tone I'm taking with the book, but Matt's tone is very, like, you're very engaged with this. So I think it is sort of the taste of the reader will probably dictate how much they like the book.
Exactly. That's if you're scared to go plumbing the depths, then you're not going to like it. You'd be like, where's my stories? But if you're a five on the Enneagram.
We can't do the Enneagram again.
No, you wouldn't. I mean, you wouldn't like it because you don't like this. You're not going to like the. But that's the. That's.
Hey, it's your passion. And I'm here for it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm also passionate about? Picking new books to put on our TBR.
All right.
So I kind of teased this at the beginning of the episode. We set ourselves some guidelines for this month. Those guidelines are you have to go out of your comfort zone. This all came about because Matt watched The Notebook and liked it. I have seen The Notebook and I kind of liked it too. I said, well, maybe we should just nominate The Notebook for our next monthly pick. And he said, okay. Then we kind of started talking about more. We each had our nominations had to be out of our comfort zone. Books we probably wouldn't normally want to read or pick up or
however. I think you said, yeah, books that make people who listen to the show think, what, they're reading what?
Yeah.
Like, just be like, huh? So I think...
And I kind of put them in different categories. So I have three categories and four books up for nomination tonight. All right. Do you want to begin that?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I had a couple. It was fun. I went to a used bookstore and kind of shopped. I actually bought some, right? I found some that I don't want to nominate, but I just want to bring up because, you know, they're weird or goofy or caught my eye. One made me think of the Taylor Swift thing. It was a halfway decent connection there. But it was interesting to, you remember when we worked at the bookstore?
Mm-hmm.
And I was a shelver at a library for a summer once. And there were certain sections where I'd slow down and the sci-fi fantasy, it would, you know, it was fun to shelve those sections. I'd look like, oh, these books look cool. And I'd make a mental note of what I want to read. And there were certain sections that I just did as quick as I could. I didn't stop to it was just.
You know exactly what you're talking about.
And so when I went to the store, I made a point to pay attention to the sections.
Oh, that's very smart.
Over. And I got some of them. Some of them I didn't get a Nora Roberts, but Nora Roberts was one of those. It's a whole shelf full I would ignore.
Yeah, she came across my radar.
But stuff, you know, stuff like that. I was like, okay, let me. And some of them I don't want to nominate, but they were just, you know, came to mind.
Give me some of the fringe. Non-nominations, but fringe books. What do you got?
Well, this one actually would have been all right for our last patron one. It's Elizabeth Peters. What caught my eye was the title and cover. It's called Naked Once More.
Okay.
it sounds a halfway decent like murder mystery.
It does. I think I recognize the author's name. I don't recognize the title, but
she's got a lot.
Yeah.
I also, in shopping for this, I noticed there's like 10 other murder mystery authors we totally ignored that could have been.
Murder mystery is a very intimidating genre, in my opinion, because there's a lot of authors and a lot of authors have a lot of books.
There's a lot. I mean,
and if you want to dip your toe in, you're like, I don't know where to dip my toe in.
We totally, Sue Grafton, ABC, Mary Higgins Clark. Oh, yeah. I noticed a lot of we totally ignored those.
And I will say this, I would bet that we would actually enjoy those books quite a bit.
Oh, I almost guarantee we would. Yeah. I think I enjoy Elizabeth Peters here. I'm also not nominating it because it's too close to our murder mystery thing, and it would actually be kind of good. But the cover's goofy. is a on the cover. If you Google it, audience, it's just a lady sitting naked in a chair surrounded by books. And it's called Naked Once More.
There you go.
But this next one actually didn't sound too bad either, but the title made me giggle. It's called Dingley Falls by Peter. You'll like this. Michael Malone.
Oh, the coach of the NBA champions. Michael Malone wrote a book called Dingley Falls.
It might not be the same book.
You know what? That book, I can see what you're holding up. There was a time when you could buy like a nice mass market like that, and it's just the cover art is kind of corny, but I enjoy those.
There's a certain type of not epic, but just drama. I don't know, historical.
They're almost trying to capture Gone with the Wind a little bit
ish, but this is a little this is, I think, 30s or 40s in Connecticut. But Jeffrey Archer kind of did some books like that. You know, like that would be fun to visit at some point. This is just a small little
Dingley Falls. I kind
of
have
Dingley Falls. The antique crammed homes of Elizabeth Circle, the residents of Dingley Falls, are steeped in New England tradition and up-to-date scandal. Now, but it goes on from there. Just a little small town, the foibles and drama of the inhabitants and stuff.
Oh, there's an updated cover from 19... I don't know when. Not as good as the one you have. Says it's in the tradition of Thornton Wilder's Our Town.
See, yeah, that type of thing. Like a pleasant little...
Okay, Dingley Falls. It's not a nomination, but it's a funny title.
Funny title, Dingley. Okay, I know one more. One more. This is the one that made me think of the Taylor Swift thing. I recognize this author. I think I recognize this cover. It's called Kitty Goes to Washington.
Kitty Goes to Washington. Oh, that looks like... oh boy, by Carrie Vaughn. He's showing me the cover here. It's got a leopard, I believe, on the bottom.
Leopard and a very attractive woman in a skin tight dress. The back of the book.
Microphone, and then the moon is blood. Is that the sun or the moon? I can't tell.
I can't even.
And
I think it's more romance.
Seems very, this is like a dangerous room.
Yeah.
It looks hot, and there's a leopard and there's a microphone. I'm not sure.
The back says, "Werewolves do it better. The country's only celebrity werewolf."
I thought, what? Can you say that again?
"Werewolves do it better."
Okay.
Tagline into the explanation. The country's only celebrity werewolf, late night radio host Kitty Norville, prefers to be heard, not.
What?
But when she's invited.
Why is this not a nomination?
But when she's invited to testify at a Senate hearing on behalf of Supernaturals, her face gets plastered on national TV. Kitty's been in hot water before, but jumping onto the DC underworld brings a new set of problems and a new set of friends and enemies, including the vampire mistress of the city, an uber-hot Brazilian were-jaguar, and a paranoid Bible-thumping senator who wants to expose Kitty as a monster. Kitty quickly learns that in this city of silly politicians and backstabbing pundits, everyone's itching for a fight.
What did you just read?
Supernatural romance thing?
I have found the most interesting book that we aren't going to read in 2023.
No, but let me say why I brought up the Taylor Swift thing.
She's a werewolf?
I'm telling you, Peter. There's no percentage in reading a book like this, because what if we like it?
Oh,
yeah. You know what I mean? What? How do you mold your life?
Oh, yeah. The
rest of your life? Are we just going to be the smutty horror sci-fi romance podcast? Hey,
let's go.
I'm saying we got to close off that road before we even go down it. You know what I mean? So that's, it's tempting. But what if we like it?
It's dangerous.
We can't go there.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You saved us. You saved us.
Mm-hmm.
Truth Corner? That's a wild story premise. That sounds awesome.
I mean, I guess Werewolf.
Let's might see if I get the audio version of that book and just, I don't know. That would be weird to work to. Probably, I'd be like, I'm very confused.
Make sure you have earbuds so people can't walk in on you listening to it.
And the werewolf would be like, what? The werewolf and the...
She's what? A talk what? Radio host?
Did she become a leopard? I thought werewolves were werewolves. Why is there a leopard?
Was where you noticed there was a were jaguar. A were, you can be a bear anything. Were bear.
Okay. I'm afraid to ask you what your actual nominations are.
Tamer.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
You want me to go first? I mean, that was a...
Yeah, go first. Break it up a little bit.
All right. Here are my categories, Matt. I got romance, I got YA fiction, and I have auto fiction. Which book do you want to hear about first?
Let's do the romance.
Okay. I think this is romance. This might be more love story than romance.
Well, I mean, we could get into
a whole... I believe it was a bestseller when it came out. Very popular movie also when it came out. And that would be The Bridges of Madison County by Robert James Waller.
Okay.
Everyone's heard that title. I think it's the love story.
I've seen the movie. Yeah.
I would like to watch... I have never seen the movie. I would like to watch it. And I think I would like to read this book.
It'd be a good excuse to... Okay.
So that's my first nomination. Gotcha. The Bridges of Madison County. Good title for a book, too.
You're going to...
A little short book, too.
Yeah. It's about Clint Eastwood and Meryl Streep.
You want me to tell you what it's about?
Just a little bit. Are they divorcees? Are they widowers? What's...
If you've ever experienced the one true love of your life, a love that for some reason could never be, you will understand why readers all over the world are so moved by this small, unknown first novel that became a publishing phenomenon and a number one bestseller. The story of Robert Kincaid, the photographer and free spirit searching for the covered bridges of Madison County, and Francesca Johnson, the farm wife waiting for the fulfillment of a girlhood dream, the bridges of Madison County, gives voice to the longings of men and women everywhere and shows us what it is to love and be loved so intensely that life is never the same again.
It's a pretty good nomination. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
That was out of left field. So you read what?
The Bridges of Madison.
It's Madison County.
Like it's, and then you wipe a tear away and you're like, what?
Yeah. All right.
I picked up I don't know what serious book. I'm in my room. There's a lot of serious books. Anyway. Just trying to tell a joke, Matt. Give me your first nomination.
All right. This is the closest probably to Bridges in Madison County. It is Knights in Rodance by Nicholas Sparks, which I believe is also a movie.
Knights in Rodance.
It is, let's see, reeling with heartache after her husband abandons her for a younger woman, Adrian Willis flees to the small coastal town of Rodance, North Carolina, to tend a friend's inn. Here she hopes to find the tranquility she so desperately needs to rethink her life. But almost as soon as she gets there, she meets Richard Gere and blah, blah, blah. He's got issues too. And guess what?
Knights in Rodance.
Yeah.
Nicholas Sparks, the old...
I wouldn't mind
doing how that. Rich is Nicholas Sparks?
Probably. He is very well. I was looking at all his books. Almost every single one is number one bestseller on the cover, and almost every single one has been made into a movie. Doing pretty well.
All right, let me get to my YA nominations, Matt.
Okay.
Working in the bookstore, you and I, we know YA is king. It makes the bookstores a lot of money. A lot of avid readers, a lot of series, the people that kids, adults are huge fans of. This one, when I say the title to you, I don't know if you're going to know the title. If I showed you the cover, I don't have the cover of the book. I think you would know what it was almost immediately. And that is City of Bones by Cassandra Clare.
Oh, yeah, I know that one. Yeah.
It's got like a picture of a city. I think this is the Mortal Instruments series. And it's like a young guy with no shirt on. You don't see it anyway. It's It's a very, you know, YA cover. It is, it's fantasy, I would say. Let me just read all the genres Goodreads says that it is. It's fantasy, it's young adult, it's paranormal, it's romance, it's urban fantasy, it's fiction, vampires. Oh, wait, there's more, man. Supernatural, young adult fantasy, magic, and that's it.
That's a lot.
That's all you need to know.
This is the first one, right?
This is the first one. There are, I believe, six of them. City of Bones. Out of left field, right?
That's out of left field. Do you think it's a little bit of the Taylor Swift conundrum here?
Oh, yeah.
Are you worried about that?
Yeah, I think that's going to be with all of these nominations.
What if we like it?
What if we like
I'm more willing to be a secret Nicholas Sparks guy than a YA paranormal.
All right. Well, let me do my other YA one here first.
Okay.
I hear this. I think he does stuff on YouTube, this author. I could be completely wrong about this. This one's a big bummer. I'm going to tell you right now. This is a bummer book.
Okay.
And that would
13 be Reasons Why?
New. The Fault in Our Stars by John Green. Gathers about two young adults with cancer. And this is also a movie, and it sounds, I'm guessing, one or both of them die.
Yeah.
So, bummer book, but...
Heard of the guy, yeah.
You've heard of the author. He's very popular. He makes, sells books left and right. Fault in Our Stars. John Green.
That's very in keeping with...
Yeah, pretty good.
Less of a Taylor Swift dilemma there, just more of a sad...
Yeah, it might just be a real...
Sad
bummer of a summer if we're reading The Fault in Our Stars.
I'd rather read about middle-aged divorcees.
But hey, you know what? That's my those are
good nomination. They're good nominations. Yeah.
Give me a couple more, Matt.
All right. Let me do this. Is a low-key fun one. Fun one, maybe. So do you remember that book Shopaholic?
Shopaholic.
Kinsella, she had quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
This is I didn't want to do Shopaholic, but it's called Can You Keep a Secret by Sophie Kinsella.
Can you keep a secret?
Meet Emma Corrigan, a young woman with a huge heart, an irrepressible spirit, and a few little secrets.
Oh.
Secrets from her boyfriend. I've always thought Connor looks a bit like Ken, as in Barbie and Ken.
What?
Handsome, but plastic, I guess. Secret she wouldn't share with anyone in the world. I have no idea what NATO stands for or even what it is.
Hey.
Till she spills them all to a handsome stranger on a plane.
Oh, no.
She thought he was a stranger until Emma comes face to face with Jack Harper, the company's elusive CEO.
No way.
Who now knows every single humiliating detail about her.
I was making fun of that. That kind of sounds fun.
Doesn't it kind of sound fun? Sounds like
that sounds fun.
If I told you this was a neglected Renee Zellweger movie from like 1998, you'd be like, oh,
sounds is like. Is it? No?
No.
Oh.
But it sounds like that type of thing.
I always like a good 90s Renee Zellweger. Can't say
that. Yeah.
Whatever happened to her. She's good. I liked her. Anyway, can you keep a secret?
Fun, right?
Good nomination.
You accidentally told all your deepest, darkest secrets to your new boss.
That's like the premise of Undercover Boss, kind of.
This might
That's more like the undercover boss finally learns what his employees actually think. But
I don't like reality TV.
Okay. Moving on. My last one's kind of a doozy, Matt. I'm not going to lie.
It's auto fiction. Okay.
Let me
know what it is first. When you said auto fiction, I was like, oh, that's not out of left field for us. But go ahead.
Hey. Yeah, it's not really out of left. But it's out of left field just in the fact that we kind of like to make fun of it. Kind of like to say, it's not very good. We don't like that. But, hey, kind of go out of left field. Got to go try some books that we probably weren't going to nominate otherwise. This one, it's one of our favorite authors. You love them.
The Choo Choo Station?
Yes, that's not what it's the actual title, but it is Leaving the Tatcha Station or Choo Choo Station by Ben Lerner. I saw some reviews basically saying that it just seemed like he wrote down what happened to him and then called it a book. One star.
It's been known to happen, yeah.
So, Warner another shot. He's not good. He might be good. We don't
Maybe know. His first one's good. I just didn't like the one we read.
What was that one?
The good. It is Adelaide. It's
Topeka
a good
school.
I see what you're going for. I actually found.
He picked it up.
Not that. I was gonna bring it up, but it's kind of. Maybe we should do like a literary lit fic July or something.
Okay.
So have you heard of Muriel Spark?
Yeah.
Okay. So she happened to be next to Nicholas Spark, and I picked it up, and this is called The Finishing School. And it's like, oh, this actually sounds really good. I don't want to nominate this. So it's like, hey, it's not, I think we're going for kind of ironic guilty pleasures here. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to nominate the Muriel Spark for that, but I have it here. I wonder if the Lerner book is kind of like that, only not, I'm sure it's not as good as Muriel Spark, but
I thought I would just throw it out there.
Yeah, no, I see what you're going for.
Anyway, okay. That's all my nominations. You have more nominations, I imagine.
I have two more. Not the Finishing School.
Muriel Spark. One of her books. Hold on.
The Finishing School sounds great, but not actually good. Not what we're doing this month.
I don't know. Memento Mori. I have The Prime of Miss Jean Brody. I have that. She's a well-respected. She's from born in Edinburgh.
Oh, Scottish.
Died in Florence, Italy. There you go. Some facts about Muriel Spark. All right, Matt.
Okay, two more. One, you'll probably recognize the name. Another section, huge section, skipped over. Debbie Maycomer.
Oh, yeah.
So let's see. This one is called The Man You'll Marry.
The Man You'll Marry.
The wedding dress was made many years ago, and it came with a promise. The first man you meet is the man you'll marry. And then Shelley
Hamilton. The man you'll meet is the man you'll marry.
Yeah, I guess maybe the next man you meet.
How does that work?
Not literally the first man you meet, because then every girl would marry the doctor.
Or the father.
Can't have that. Shelley Hansen was horrified when her great aunt's wedding dress arrived because, according to family legend, she was destined to marry the next man she met. So after you get the dress as an adult.
Still a weird concept. When
she got on an escalator and fell into Mark Brady's arms, she told him and herself, blah, blah, blah. We go from there, right?
Mark Brady.
Sounds like kind of lighthearted.
Sleazebag, Mark Brady.
Thinking of Tom Brady. So maybe a little light romance.
Okay. It's out of left field.
Oh, sounds like there's another guy, too. There's Jordan Wilcox.
Get out of here, Wilcox.
So it's going to be another.
Your money's no good here.
Oh, no. She sends the dress to another girl. So I think we're going to have alternate.
Oh, this is like The Ring, like where you send the video and then the next person who sees it die.
It's kind of sister with the traveling pants, only the wedding dress.
I think it's The Ring. Remember? Isn't The Ring like that?
Yeah, the death instead of pants. And this is a wedding dress. Huh. You could talk me into it. I'm curious about her writing style.
I like it.
I bought these. I own these now. So I'm not under a time constraint.
Give me another one. Give me the last one.
Okay. This last one's interesting. This last one sounds halfway good. I was judging it on the cover and just the author, but Penny Vincenzi. Have you heard of her?
I think I know that.
She's got a lot. This sounds kind of good. Like, it's kind of cheating.
What's the title? Give me the title.
Another Woman. And it looks like a romance. There's a picture of like a model looking girl, and the cover's kind of light orange to pinkish. But then the night before her lavish wedding, Cressida Forrest goes to bed serene and happy. By the morning, she has vanished without apparent cause and without a trace. Shocked, anxious, and uncomprehending, the two families face a long day of revelations as a complex, fragile web of sexual, marital, and financial secrets ripped apart by Cressida's disappearance. Right? And the question they're all forced to ask is, who really was the woman they thought they knew? Perfect daughter, sister, lover, and wife never to be? By the author who entranced millions of readers with, you know, all their other books, blah, blah, blah. That actually sounds halfway like Gone Girl-ish, halfway decent, little mystery.
All right, out of left field. I kind of liked Out of Left Field as a
that's fun
concept. Now we have to pick the book.
We can maybe do it again.
Yeah, I think we should do it again. Where are you leaning towards?
Oh, of yours, the Bridges, Madison County.
I'm kind of leaning towards yours, the Nicholas Sparks. I want to see what all the hubbub is about. What if it's good?
Yeah. Well, I mean, good, and we are kind of cloaking. I think we're leaning towards what? Stuff we think we'll secretly like, but we can cloak it with irony, right?
I think.
Knights and Rodans. Would the other one be the Kinsella book? Would be the.
Can you keep a secret? Is that the
Kinsella? Yeah, book? More goofy. I'm curious about the wedding dress one.
Kind of. Also, the Bridges of Madison County. It kind of sounds.
I think Bridges of Madison. I think we should do the Sparks or the Madison County.
Let's do Sparks.
You want to do Knights and Rodans?
That's completely in left field. We just did such.
Yeah.
By the way, RIP Cormac McCarthy just passed.
Yeah. Yeah. Martin Amis, too.
Remember yeah. Kind of a bad month for
writers.
Yeah. But yeah, we go from Cormac McCarthy to Nicholas Sparks. That's out of left field.
Well, this will be a relief for you. Having just read The Manticore, putting off self-discovery, you can lose yourself in.
Knights and Rodan. I think all of his books take place in North Carolina, right?
Oh, do they? I've only seen The Notebook. I've never read one. I've seen The Notebook recently.
There's a movie. But we have to watch the movie, too.
Well, oh, yeah. We'll definitely watch the movie, too. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So add that to the TBR.
Yeah. It is not that long. This is good.
Not that long. It's a beach read.
He's a handsome guy.
Is he?
I mean, his author photo. I'm sure he doesn't look like this now.
He could.
Well taken author photo.
Show me it. Oh, yeah. Knights and Rodan. Nicholas Sparks. Cool. I wonder if he goes by Nick Sparks anytime. Is it always Nicholas?
Yeah. I wonder how old he was when he struck gold. I'm curious about. Maybe we'll do
struck
a little.
Struck gold.
He really, I mean, I'm maybe we'll do a little background on him. What did he do before?
You know? Watch us do the most research we've ever done on an episode.
Or deep dive on Nicholas Sparks' life.
Like, you know, how many drafts he did of this before it got sold?
I wonder if he does.
Is this before The Notebook? Like, as far as publishing?
I think so. I mean, frankly, it kind of seems like he's got a little formula for stuff. But copyright 2002.
Okay.
So I think an earlier one. Is he still going? I'm out of the loop.
Let's see here. Oh, you know what? There was that one, A Walk to Remember.
That's the one where.
That's a bummer one, too.
Yeah, I don't want to read that. I don't want to do that.
He's from Omaha. But let me pull up The Notebook. The Notebook had a sequel called The Wedding. And. Why am I not seeing The Knights of Rodan?
You can.
Oh, because it's spelled differently than I thought. Interesting.
Oh, yeah, there's an E at the end.
Well, I thought it was Rodan, R-O-D-A-N, but there's.
Oh, sorry, Rodantha, Rodanthe.
Jeez. Okay, we're off on the awful first step here. I'm gonna have to see how you pronounce this Rodan. That doesn't sound right. I think I'm gonna. That's 2002. This would be his. Looks like maybe seventh book, somewhere sixth book. So he's got his chops here. The movies that have been based off of his books have made $889 million worldwide. And this was made into a movie in 2008 with Richard Gere and Diane Lane.
I knew it was Richard Gere.
It made $84 million at the box office. Awesome. That's what we're watching.
Cool. I'm going to read the book, though.
It has James Franco in it, and that's all. Viola Davis. Okay, there we go. That was a lot of information for... That's I should have saved all that information for the episode.
For the episode, yeah, we're gonna dive on.
Not Rodan, Rodan.
Rodan, Knights in Rodan.
I don't know. I feel like Rodan sounds better. Anyway,
yeah, they pronounce it.
We have a very long TBR. I'm not gonna go through it all. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know we will get to all the books at some point. When that happens, is sort of up to the way of the winds. Matt, you're pointing at me.
Oh, I was gonna say, look out, like the ones coming up. We should have. I finished Movable Feast,
so it's doable. That's a doable short read, so I can get that. We can have that done soon.
And we picked a new murder mystery over on Patreon.
We did.
Patreon's a good way to support us if you're so inclined, and we do little thriller corner read-alongs, and we send you a coffee mug.
It's very fun. Yeah, interactions. You get to help us pick the books with votes. Got baseball coming up over there. We have a half dozen books over on our normal episode. We have a lot of stuff reading this summer.
Yeah.
Not a boring... I have like 8 books checked out from the library. I know that it makes you mad. I finished one of them actually in Santa Fe.
Nice. Doesn't make me mad.
It's a quick read. It's a quick read.
We'll talk about it.
Good episode, Matt.
I hope so.
I'm sorry my audiobook segment didn't go over well with you.
It did fine. You worry too much.
I might listen to it tomorrow at work.
You should finish it.
Yeah, it's still not. A long time. But I think that does it for tonight. Thanks for listening, and we will be back next week.